You're listening to Shtetl on the Shortwave on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Tamara Kramer, and Shtetl is a Yiddish word that describes the towns of Eastern Europe where the Jews once lived. Shtetl on the Shortwave is a show about Jewish arts and culture in Montreal. To Shtetl on the Shortwave, the Yom Kippur edition. And that was Snowblink. And on today's show, if you're a sinner and you're listening, which I hope you are, you've tuned in to the right show because it's all about repentance. And the song that we just heard was called Rut and Nuzzle. It's off of Snowblink's album Long Live. And the woman who's the songwriter and singer on Snowblink is Daniela Gesundheit. And she's with us today, but not only is she a songwriter and singer with a beautiful, beautiful album, which I really encourage you to go check out. You can hear some of the songs on her MySpace page, or you can go to snowblink.org. She is also a cantor, and we're speaking to her today from Toronto. Danielle, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tamara. Thanks for having me.
So, okay, before I start, asking you all these really deep and intense questions about Yom Kippur and the Day of Atonement. I just want to ask you. No, I'm not. I'm not going to ask you anything too scary.
Am I going to have to confess on the air?
Definitely, absolutely. I hope that's okay. After the first like song break, we'll get you to confess.
All right, I'll make a short list.
Okay. Well, the very first question that I want to ask is, what is a cantor?
What is a cantor? It's the song leader for a Jewish ritual. So it's somebody who basically retains and holds all the... They're kind of like a jukebox, like a liturgical jukebox. But obviously there's deeper meaning to it as well. Someone who will stand in front of people and lead them in prayer.
Okay, and what's the difference between a cantor and a rabbi?
Well, the difference seems to be fading more and more as time goes on. I think the rabbi used to be the only one in charge of officiating life cycle rituals and these sorts of things like weddings, bar mitzvahs, and funerals. And more we see cantors taking on this role and having more of a leadership role in people's lives and congregants' lives, I guess.
Well, I guess I'm kind of wondering what the training is. Is it more a musical training, or are you also training to be kind of a spiritual leader? What was your training like?
I had a very unconventional path to it, and it's still in process. But I suppose if somebody's going to cantorial school, there is quite a lot more focus on music. I mean, you have to take music theory classes and choir and conducting classes and that sort of thing. So there is a huge focus on music. But the way I've approached it, I've just studied privately with people. And I guess my approach with that was that I wanted to learn from people that are practicing and learn by experience and learn through practice rather than through schooling. So I've just studied privately with several teachers.
Okay,
and I hope to do more of that.
Okay, and what made you decide to become a cantor?
Oh gosh. I think lots of things. I found myself about halfway through university, kind of returning to Jewish studies. I went to a Jewish day school, and then at some point I just became fascinated again with the language, with Hebrew and with liturgical language and with the music of it. And I think around the same time I happened to keep running into these women that have these parallel lives as songwriters on the one hand and cantors on the other hand, and they're not that common, but I kept running into them, and so I was very inspired by it, and by them, by those women.
Did you have a really strong Jewish upbringing?
I did. My parents were pretty involved with their synagogue, and you know, we were quite reform. I mean, we weren't conservative about any of it, but it was very present. I studied it every day, and I chose to continue studying it longer than I had to, so it played a big part, I'd say.
I wanted to, before we go, you agreed to do something, and I'm so excited about it, but before we do, I wanted to just talk a bit about Yom Kippur, that we just finished, we just went through Rosh Hashanah, the new year for the Jewish people, and coming up next week is Yom Kippur. So most people that I know, a lot of people that I know, kind of the holiday comes and goes, either they forgot to go to synagogue, or they avoided the building like a plague, or it never even crossed their mind. What does Yom Kippur mean to you?
Oh gosh, well, I mean, it's evolved, right? So like when I was at university, I was not involved at all with the Jewish community there. I wasn't interested at all. And Yom Kippur when I was in university meant either going home with somebody to like Long Island or whatever, like somebody else's parents' synagogue and hating it, or several times on Yom Kippur I ended up taking out different musical versions of the Kol Nidre, like as many as I could find from the music library, and just spending the day listening to those different versions, and then, you know, taking a long walk in the woods or whatever. So it's changed, but it's basically just a time to connect with our own vulnerability and with our own, I mean, it's very heavy to say out loud, but like with our own deaths, that like we're changing constantly and we're going to die. And so what's our life? It's a time to evaluate your life. So
heavy.
Yeah, it is. It's totally heavy. I mean, it's meant to be. Mm-hmm. It's meant to be heavy.
So why do you think so many people are so turned off from it and not connected to it when it seems like such an essential part of any human's life, dealing with these questions? Why is it that so many Jewish people just seem, that I know, I mean, I'm probably being pretty presumptuous here because I know there's a lot of people who do connect. It's just what I see around me is a complete, it's like, oh yeah, it's the new year, so let's get together and eat an apple and honey. But beyond that, there's nothing there. Why is it that people aren't connecting to this?
Well, I think maybe the model that they've been exposed to, maybe their parents' synagogue, for instance, which is what most of us are familiar with, is just our parents' model of Judaism, was not fulfilling. It was maybe shallow, or the music was bad, or you know, we didn't like how people dressed, or the atmosphere of the building, or the way we felt when we were there. And so, you know, and we're just like, well, why would we move towards something like that when it doesn't express anything that we care about? But that's just one way to express the ritual. That's just one version of it, right? So there's so many different ways to approach it. But I don't know why people, you know, shy away from the ideas of the holiday itself. I couldn't say.
No, I know.
I think it's kind of fascinating, so.
Well, you're saying that there's like so many different, like there's different ways that we could approach it. What would be another way that people could approach it? If you feel on the spot here, I'm really sorry, but this is like, I was telling Juliet, the tech for the show, like, this half hour is my synagogue for the year.
Yeah.
I got to ask all my spiritual questions right now.
Yeah.
What is another way of approaching it that's more appealing?
Well, I mean, if the issue is that you don't like being in a group of people with this kind of outdated text and these outdated translations and all this talk of God, maybe you're an atheist, maybe you don't believe in God or like this idea, then you can just spend a day thinking about death. Honestly, you could think about people that have died. You can remember people. You can write about it. You can get together with several friends and talk about people who have passed away, or you know, talk about things that you'd like to change about yourself. I mean, that sounds a little like a, you know, New Agey Healy.
I don't know. I'm kind of into that whole New Agey Healy thing.
About things you want to change. Yeah, everybody is secretly.
You know what? It's true, because I never really, when I think about Yom Kippur, I don't really, even though it's all about getting written into the Book of Life, I don't actually really associate it with death. I always think about it as a day of begging, really begging God for forgiveness for all our sins.
Yes, I guess the death thing is coming to mind because of the remembrance. You know, Yisker is a remembrance ceremony, so that comes to mind. And then, you know, there's also just, you know, when you fast, if you're fasting, you're abstaining from life-affirming activities.
Mm-hmm.
You're not eating. You're not supporting life. You're kind of tasting this other approach.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Fasting is a little bit of a taste of death. That's a good way of putting it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so before we get to hear this beautiful rendition of the Kol Nidre, can you explain what the prayer actually means or what you'll be singing about?
Sure. So the Kol Nidre, to my understanding, is a prayer that basically, it's saying all of the vows that we've made in the past year, make them null, make them void, because we're human and we're going to make mistakes and we're going to make promises that we can't keep. And we did. We made promises in the last year that we could not fulfill, but like we're asking God or we're asking ourselves, that's one way to interpret it as well, to forgive ourselves and to let those promises be null and be void so that we can start with a clean slate and not basically be weighed down by these promises that we couldn't keep.
Okay, so
yeah,
to all the Shtetl listeners out there, you're in for a real treat. This is Daniela Gesundheit of Snowblink singing Kol Nidre.
Kol Nidre Vesarei Vacharanei Vekonanei Vechinuyei Vekinusei Ushvu Udiacharimna Vedia Sarna Alnafshatana Niom Kippurim Ze Adiom Kippurim Abba Aleinu Aleinu Icharatna, Icharatna ve'on, Kulon, Yehon Sharan, Shvikin, Shvitin, the Teilin mevutalin, La'ashririn. Vela kayamim nidrana la nidrei ve esarana la esarei ushvuatana la shvu. So there's the Kol Nidre. You usually sing it three times in the service, three times in a row.
I wouldn't mind if you sang it two more times.
Oh, dear.
No, that was really beautiful. Really beautiful. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Sure.
I really, really appreciate it. Now that means I don't have to go to synagogue next week.
You are absolved, my child. Do three Hail Marys. You're fine.
Wow. Okay, well, you're going to be Well, I don't know if it's called performing or ministering to a congregation this year in Toronto. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm working with Shirley Benu this year, which translates to Song of Our Hearts, which I love. But they're an unaffiliated Toronto congregation, egalitarian.
What does that mean, unaffiliated?
It means that they're not Reform, they're not Renewal, they're not Reconstructionist, they're not Conservative, they're not Orthodox. They're their own thing, and they're all inclusive. Everybody is welcome. So
what does the service there look like as opposed to what we might be used to seeing at a traditional, more traditional synagogue? Mm-hmm. Are the services in Hebrew, or are they in English, or?
They're in both. They're in Hebrew and in English. There's a lot of congregant participation, a lot of songs that everybody knows and sings together, kind of, you know, simple chant kind of songs. It's very informal in dress. Like, there's no dress code, right? So there's no, you don't have to put on a big suit if you don't feel comfortable doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the services are held in community centers. There's no permanent synagogue. We're traveling Jews.
Okay.
So.
And so what made you decide to join this and work with this synagogue, Shirley Benu?
It's mostly luck, actually. But I was here when they happened to be hiring for the high holidays. I was visiting in February, and we scheduled an interview, and it all just worked really well, and it became very clear that we fit together. But it was mostly luck. I just really lucked out that the first congregation that I became involved with when I got to Toronto was actually an amazing fit for who I am, too. So, yeah.
We're going to take a little break and be back with Daniela after this, but first, let's listen to her beautiful song, The Tired Bees. CKUT 90.3 FM, the Yom Kippur edition, with Daniela Gesundheit, and that was The Tired Bees off of Daniela's album Long Live. And it's really, really beautiful. You know, I really got kind of choked up there when you were singing Kol Nidre. I thought I might actually start crying.
Yeah, I got you. I got your little hiding Jewish soul in there.
My hiding Jewish soul come out to play. Before we go on, I wanted to ask you, in your incarnation as a folk singer and songwriter in Toronto, mm-hmm. Where do you perform, and where can people hear you? Because you're going to be coming to Montreal, right?
Oh yeah, I'll be in Montreal on November 15th at Le KGB, which is a tiny little coffee shop sort of venue. With Dan Goldman, whose group is Luxury Pond. He and I are music collaborators. He produced the record that you've been playing. So, yeah, we'll be playing there on the 15th. And in Toronto, I play all over the place, or I try to. You know, I usually post my shows on my website and that sort of thing.
Snowblink.org.
Snowblink, okay. Snowblink.org.
Okay. How did you come up with that name, Snowblink?
I honestly just found it in the dictionary. I spend a lot of time with the dictionary. I'm really into it. Like, if I'm writing people letters, I like have to look up every word. Even if I know the word, I'm really into the definitions and being sure about it. So honestly, I just came across it. I was writing a song, and it means the white glare above a snowfield. I found it at a time where I was looking for a name for my group, so it stuck.
And I'm kind of curious, where do you get more stage fright, playing at a club or performing or singing in front of a synagogue congregation?
Well, I don't get stage fright for clubs. I really only get stage fright for when I play in New York.
Okay. Where have you played in New York?
Where have I played in New York?
Yeah.
I've played at several places. There's a club called the Mercury Lounge. Mm-hmm. I've played a bunch of house shows. I have a CD release coming up in New York in October. At a place called Zebulon in Brooklyn. But there's just something about the scrutinizing community there. They just hear so much music there that they're braced to hate it.
That's really a nice way to go into a show.
Yeah. No, I'm of course generalizing. It's just my own perception of it. But I would say I get more jitters to sing in front of a congregation by far.
How do you prepare differently for either one of those types of performances, like a club or a synagogue?
Well, I kind of have these visualization situations where before I go on, like if I'm in this might get abstract, so just stop me if I'm not making sense, but if I'm performing in a club, I find that just before I'm about to go on, I start to see just like a thread, and I imagine just putting the thread through all the people in the room and then trying to like hold on to that thread for the whole performance. It's kind of like a visual image.
Mm-hmm.
And to prepare for singing with the congregation, it's much less of a I don't try to like stir up excited energy and very pumped kind of energy.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more of a like a serene kind of feeling.
Is it a lot of responsibility? Do you feel it's a big responsibility singing for people at synagogue when it's obviously really, it's not a regular thing. Actually, you know, what am I talking about? Some people go to synagogue every single week, right?
Yeah.
I kind of forget
some
about
people.
That.
Yeah.
But not the people that I know. Like most of the people that I know, it's like a challenge to even go at this time of year. So it's kind of like if you go, this is your one chance to like feel it, you know? So I imagine that's a lot of pressure for you.
Sure, yeah. It does feel like a lot of pressure. I mostly worry about like older people seeing me and being like, what is this young girl know about spirituality and about, you know, like, about prayer? Like, I fear that judgment. But I think I've found that even old people like my chanting. So
only maybe about 5 or so minutes left to the show.
Okay.
So there's a couple of things. Either we could go with your confession, which you said you would do earlier. Because you sound like you probably have a lot to confess. No, you sound like a very pure and lovely woman. So we could either do your confession, or if you feel like singing anymore, because I did remember last year I heard that other prayer that you did for Rosh Hashanah, and I always say it wrong, Utanet. Can you say it? Because I'm going to screw it up.
Sure, the Una Tana Tokes.
Yeah, that one. So we could either, if you feel like singing, it's such a beautiful song. I would really love to go out with that. Or we could also play another one of your songs from Snowblink. What do you feel like doing?
Sure. Well, we could maybe do a compromise. I could sing, because the Unatana Tokef is a pretty long prayer. I could sing a shorter prayer, and then you could play a Snowblink song.
Okay, that sounds perfect.
Kind of like meet in the middle.
Okay, that sounds great. So that means that you don't want to confess your sins?
I don't have any.
Okay, fine. So then what are you going to Yom Kippur service for if you don't have any sins? No. Okay, so before you sing the prayer, I don't know what prayer is it that you're going to be singing. Do you want to just let us know?
Sure. It's the Eitz Chaim Hi, and it's the prayer that you sing when you're returning the Torah to the Ark after the Torah service. And the imagery is about the Tree of Life comparing in my mind, it compares the tree of life and just the image of a tree with the image of the scrolls. So if you can picture the Torah scrolls and imagine them as trunks, tree trunks.
Wow. Where do you get this stuff from? That's awesome. Okay, so before we leave the show today and Daniela mm-hmm. sings the prayer and we go out with a song from Snowblink, I just want to make a quick announcement. On October 11th, we had Gail Marlene Schwartz on the show a couple of weeks ago doing a performance from her one-woman show, Crazy, A One Woman's Search for Sanity. So she's going to be performing that on October 11th. And if you want to get more information on where that is or to buy a ticket, you can call 514-389-4231. And thank you so much for listening to Shtetl on the Shortwave today. I hope everybody has a great new year. We'll be back next week on Friday, the day after Yom Kippur, after our souls are all cleansed from fasting and praying in whatever way we know how to do. And we'll have another great show for you. So here's Daniela Gesundheit.
So this is the Eitz Chaim Hi. Eitz Chaim Hi L'machadikim Ba V'tomchei HaMeushar D'rachei.
Each morning and night when my heart and my head hold so tight, something wants to let go. I fill little boats with my boring thoughts and float them. Go, 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 go. The wind blows them all to a small, quiet island. It's too far to swim, but I will not miss them. Their sails show. Wash the cold parts to a frozen.